Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Cork Dax and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts along this journey are Terry Farrell, our super smart science officer, Armin Shimmerman, our beloved businessman, myself, your eternal ensign, and of course, my good buddy, my hilarious helmsman. I keep throwing there's probably other H words I could throw in there, but I like hilarious helmsman. Today we have Armin.
Hey.
Hello, Armin.
Hello, Armin.
Yeah. Hello, hello, hello.
All right, we've got a few birthdays.
We have Warren Stein. Happy birthday to Warren Stein. August 13th is Warren's birthday. Happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday, August.
Hey, Warren, happy birthday. We also have Samantha Hunter on August 15th. Happy birthday, Samantha.
Samantha, happy birthday.
Samantha, happy birthday to you. And we have Jan Hanford. August 16th is Jan's birthday. Happy birthday, Jan.
Jan, happy birthday.
Go, Jan. And we've got Donna Runyon to take us home here. Donna Runyon on August 17th. Happy birthday, Donna.
Donna, many happy returns.
Happy birthday to Donna, my craps protege.
Really? You taught her everything you know.
I did. She rolled forever. So I won a couple grand for her off of it. She's telling her where to bet. So she did a good job.
Well, yeah. It's an appropriate episode for her because this is about a paradise. So
yes, exactly.
There you go.
We also have a new prophet with us. We want to welcome our new prophet, Jonathan Capps. Jonathan, welcome.
Jonathan, welcome, 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 welcome.
Welcome to our newest prophet. Jonathan Capps.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Interesting episode, right?
Armin, interesting episode. Let's talk about the fact that you're not in this episode.
Yes, no. I'm not in it. Sid is not in it. Sirach is not in it. Wow. Max is not in it.
And someone else we're missing. One other person.
Who's that?
Renee is not in this.
Oh, line. Renee. Oh, he's
right.
Isn't that crazy?
Of course.
Missing in action.
This is the first episode in the entire series in which Renee and Sid do not appear.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone else has had an episode off before
until
this.
Those guys. Yeah, everyone.
Have I had
these guys.
I don't think I've. Have I had an episode off before
I think
this?
You did. I think I'm you trying have. To remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember being very upset about it, Armin.
Yeah, I'm not quite
sure that I wasn't at the time.
Or did they? Wasn't there one where they gave you a call to so that you could get the residuals?
Like a voiceover on the comm or something
They may have put me on a voiceover, but they never told me that so I could get the residual. But everybody understands, if we appear anywhere in the episode, then we get a residual, a full residual.
Yeah.
But if you're not in it, there's no residual. So
right.
I don't get a residual for this particular episode. So let's stop watching this episode.
Exactly.
Yeah, but your name is still on the title. Doesn't that entitle you to something?
No.
You have to physically be on camera, recorded,
and just to be clear, full residual at this point for our Star Trek episodes is like 3 cents,
right?
Because they go down over time.
Yes, and just to get into the weeds a little bit more, a residual for a syndicated show is a lot less than a residual for a primetime network show.
Really?
Or a streaming show.
Or a
cable show. And unlike Voyager, we were a syndicated show, not a network show.
So does that mean if you filmed something and that ended up on the cutting room floor and that was your only appearance in that episode, you still do not get residuals?
No
residuals. Even though you worked and they cut it out, correct?
Yep.
That's wow. right.
Yes,
I did a Star Trek film, had a lovely scene with Patrick Stewart. It never made it into the final cut.
Really?
So I get no residual for that.
Which one was that, Armin?
Insurrection.
Okay, got it. Robbie, could we have your limerick for Paradise, please?
Yes, sir. Here we go. Sisko and O'Brien move in with a cult where tech won't work, so they're stuck as a result. Miles uses a gourd to scan and discovers the evil plan. For advice, Alexis is not the one to consult.
Lovely.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I like it.
That was a hard one for me, that episode. Sometimes the limericks come out easy. This one was hard.
Wow. Well, it's still a good one.
This Thank episode you. Was hard to watch, so maybe that's part of it.
Oh, go, Armin. Go. I can't wait.
I almost feel like they didn't they pronounce her name as if it was A-L-E-X-I-S? They
Sometimes.
Said Alexis. Yes, yes.
Someone
yes.
said Alexis on there. I know they did. And someone may have said Alexis like that.
It was both ways. Yeah.
Okay. Both ways. Yeah. All righty. Here is my haiku. My haiku for Paradise goes a little something like this. Sisko Brian tale, no tech human settlement. Ben makes hotbox home. Did you get the beginning of that?
Sisko Brian.
I merged their names together. I only have five syllables. So I went Sisko and I used the O of Sisko to make Brian. So I have a capital.
I like it.
Sisko Brian tale, T-A-L-E.
It's a new genre of Trek shows.
Yes.
The Sisko Brian episode.
The Sisko Brian episodes, exactly.
Yeah. Etymology, Armin. What do you
Etymology. Oh my God. That means I'm up. Okay.
It's time.
It's time for the heady part.
I always love it.
Paradise is a word from Middle English, which was pronounced paradis. I have two definitions of the word. Mm-hmm. The first, all of these are from the Oxford English Dictionary. Mm. The first of my two definitions is heaven. Paradise means the heaven, the abode of the gods and his angels, and the final abode of the righteous, which I think might pertain to what we just are about to talk about.
Yes, yes.
The second definition that I chose was a state of supreme bliss or felicity, which I think also is appropriate for this episode.
Yeah. Paradise. It's interesting to imagine the pronunciation of some of these words when you go back in the OED, because I was always told like Shakespeare, when you heard it in Shakespeare's time, that English sounded like a pirate. They kind of spoke a bit like pirates.
To be
like
more precise, it sounds like the accent from the Ozarks.
Yeah.
A pirate tends to be Southern England. That's Portsmouth. Mm. It might indeed been that.
Yeah.
But the scholars believe that it sounds very much like deep in the mountains of the Ozarks. And also there's an island in Maryland that has very close to the Shakespearean accent.
Ocracoke.
There is a thing called OP, original pronunciation, which has done a great studies about the sound of Elizabethan English. And some of the lines in Shakespeare make much more sense if you say it in OP, because then you hear it's a play on the sound.
Right.
There's a line. Sorry, I'm getting into something.
No, I love
so
it.
You
I
touched
love
upon
this.
Shakespeare. You opened up a Pandora's box. So there's a line in As You Like It. Jaques says, from hour to hour, we ripe and ripe. That's what's written. From hour to hour, we ripe and ripe. But if you do it in OP, it's from whore to whore, we ripe and ripe. So it makes a different meaning altogether.
Yeah.
And actually, that's closer to the to making that line more understandable to an audience.
Interesting. Very
so our was pronounced whore.
Whore.
Interesting, because Shakespeare was so, you know, we've opened up a Pandora's box here, but he was so clever. Yes, the sounds and the double meanings of things and all of that is so complex, the way his brain worked with
I've
language.
Been trying to peel back the onion for 50 years.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about who made this episode. We have story by Jim Trombetta and James Crocker, teleplay by Jeff King, Richard Manning, and Hans Beimler. And we have directed by none other than one of my acting teachers and mentors, Corey Allen.
Yes, Corey Allen, the man who directed the first episode of Next Generation.
That's right. He did the pilot episode of Next Gen. Good old Corey. There we go. We have guest appearances, of course. We have Gail Strickland as Alexis or Alexis. We have Julia Nixon, who was Julia Nixon's soul at one point, but now she's Julia Nixon here as Cassandra. Steve Vinovich as Joseph.
And Steve Vinovich, for you guys should know, is Ethan Phillips' best friend, one of his best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And went to college with me.
Really? I did not know that.
Steve and I went to college together. And then he went to Juilliard. He was in UCLA for a little while, and then he went to Juilliard.
Did you know that, Robbie, that he went to Juilliard?
I didn't know he went to Juilliard. I think I did a play reading with him in New York at Playwrights Horizons once. Nice. I know I crossed paths with Steve, and I've met him with Ethan over the years for, in New York for coffees and things like that. So, yeah, he's a great guy.
Have either of you worked with Gail Strickland or Julia Nixon?
No, but my wife played baseball with Gail Strickland for about 3 years. So I knew Gail from Kitty's baseball team.
Wow. That's awesome. We also have Michael Buckman Silver as V-Note. Anyone work with Michael?
Yes, I have.
Oh, boy.
So I'm watching this episode because I don't look at the cast beforehand. Mm. And I'm watching the episode in that first scene where he comes out with a bow. I'm like, who is that young guy? He looks so familiar.
Yeah.
And then in the next scene after the credits, when he starts talking, I was like, oh my God, wait a minute. So Michael Silver directed for me on Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce a couple of episodes.
Oh, wow.
Because he was very close with Marty Noxon at the time, who created the show, and she wanted Michael to direct. He's an awesome guy, but I did not, like, now he's salt and pepper, mostly gray. He's like, he's got facial hair now. Yeah. I did not recognize him at all. But he's a handsome young man.
Oh, he's a young buck here.
Yes, he is.
Interesting choice of name, though, Vinod, because you remember coming to the independent film that I filmed, that screening, Robbie, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So the main executive producer, the guy that basically provided the entire financing, was Vinod, was his name, actually. That's his real first name, Vinod. And here we have, because, you know, you don't see that name very often. He was our executive producer. Yeah, Vinod. Oh. We have Eric Weiss as Stefan. I don't know how they pronounced it. Mm-hmm. That was the individual who was in the box in the very beginning. Yes.
Yeah.
He had a lot of fun in there.
I don't think he had fun.
I'm joking, of course. We also have uncredited co-stars. We have Lisa Madigan as Meg, the almost dead, and then later dead, spoiler alert, colonist. Yeah. So, and that's it. That's all of our people.
And as I looked at the background people in the village, I thought, these are all new people. I've never seen these faces before.
Right.
Well, that's good that they did that. Yes. Sometimes they cheat and they use the same people
from the promenade.
They did that on Voyager. You'd go to a planet and there'd be a couple of people we knew.
Right.
As when we rewatch these episodes, I'm like, that's cheating.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be on our ship. We recognize those faces.
A couple of quick notes about story and script. Michael Piller commented that we hadn't done a Cisco episode since Second Sight, and I wanted to do another show that gave Cisco the opportunity to show courage and force of personality. Now, the idea of a cult was chosen by Michael Piller because he was interested in the idea, and cultism is an issue, his quote, that I'm very interested in because I've got a family member who was involved in a cult. So I had to study the issues quite a bit.
Mm.
That's interesting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that either. Mm. Wow.
And Jim Trombetta, one of the writers, he based his original idea for this episode on the primitivist anti-technology philosophy of the Khmer Rouge of Southeast Asia. So that's another fact I had no clue about either. But interesting facts. Yeah.
Interesting.
For sure.
It's funny when you bring up the cult idea. You know, cults, there's a big gray area where you can kind of say, oh, I'm a part of this group and we believe these things and it's a good, you know, there's good that we do, or this group helps me in some way. And then there's like, where does that line cross into, because it's part of this plot as well. Like, is this, you know, a lot of them believe, and they, spoiler alert, but they make a choice in the end to kind of go keep going with this belief, even after they have a choice. So is the definition of a cult like a cult of personality, that there's kind of a person embodies the leadership role that every, I don't know, but that would make sense
I
in
think
this.
that's intrinsic to a cult, although it doesn't seem to me that it has to be that it has to be one person. It could be more than one person, but certainly when one reads about cults, there usually is one person that they're focusing on who is the leader, who is the person directing the rest of the community around him or her.
Yeah, there's another interesting note I found. Both producer Ira Stephen Baer and director Corey Allen were disappointed with the final form of this episode. Baer felt that the show wavers unevenly between depicting the colony both in a good and a bad light, but never se really settles for either view.
I would disagree with you. That's one of the things I liked about the episode is it doesn't say it's good or bad. It
It
leaves it up
leaves
to the
it.
viewer to decide.
Oh, a little thing from David Livingston, who we just talked about
Oh.
earlier, commented, "It was a tough show because we had to create an exterior environment on stage 18. The way that Corey and Martin shot it with long lenses and stuff was successful in selling that world. It was fun to build part of a ship on the surface, so you really got the sense of size. We wanted it to be bigger, but we just didn't have the money. So the grand designs that we had for the set were severely truncated." So
I could have sworn that those scenes were shot outside.
there was some of them
Some of
that
it was
were
outside and
a
some of,
very
yeah,
little
okay.
bit. Like
Yeah.
they used the same creekside pathway that
At
they
Griffith
used for
Park.
Bajor at
At
Griffith
Griffith
River
Park.
Park. Yeah.
Yeah,
But
that's
the
the
main
one.
set was inside.
The actual cell, the colony itself, right, with the hot box, that's all on stage 18 there, right? So,
but I thought it was very effective. I actually didn't know at first. I was like, are they outside
Is
or
it outside or is
inside?
it
But
not?
a couple of
So,
things gave it away later on that they were inside. But yeah,
Okay.
cool.
Jump into it, Robbie. Let's
Yeah,
go.
well, we've got a station log from Cisco. He says, "To respond to questions about setting up colonies near the wormhole, Chief O'Brien and I have set out to survey a nearby star system." So yeah, right away we know it's a Sisko O'Brien episode.
I like that combo though.
Yeah, I
I
do
really
too.
do. I enjoy
I
it.
do
They
too.
were a
very good combo. They
Yeah.
understood each other. They were simpatico with each other.
Oh, totally.
As
They
characters or as actors?
as actors.
As
As
actors.
actors, they had a
Okay.
very, very good relationship.
Great. Great. I didn't know that. I was curious about that.
They got along very well.
I think they complemented each other, their acting as well.
Yeah,
So they did a
I
good
would
job.
venture to say that Cullum was probably Avery's favorite person on the set.
Wow. Really? Well, we did not know that.
I
So
did not know that.
now we do.
Yeah. Well, O'Brien and Sisko are looking for these possible spots for colonies. They discuss Jake, and O'Brien says he's happy to mentor him. Sisko reveals here that Jake's in the bottom third of his class, which I didn't get that impression from the last
Well, not in
episode.
his class, in a
Oh, his
particular
age group.
study. No, it was a study. It was a mechanical something
Mechanical
that
aptitude, yep.
that's where he was in the third, because we've just heard in the previous episode that he's at the top of his class.
I know.
So it's, any one of us can be very good at most things, but bad at one particular thing.
Yeah. Well, Miles says he was bad at it too. He said he was in the bottom third, and he tells this story about fixing this transporter just in time to get away from some Cardassians.
So the question I ask myself is, why is that in the episode? I don't think that's a bad thing, but I ask myself, why is that speech there? Why now? Why there? And I think it's to, again, spoiler alert, it's to get to make us understand how he's capable of doing what he does towards the end of the episode. That
Yeah.
he's very clever. He's very and has an intuition about things and how to use things. That allows him to come up with this particular answer at the end of the episode. However, he does a number of other things in the episode. I go, really? Who trained you to do that? What does that have to do with your skill set? What is that all about? And I went, they're just making him more superhuman than he needs to be. It's
Yeah, that happens for all the characters, though, in a
not for
way. Like
me, it
I've,
doesn't.
well, I've seen Bashir be an amazing pilot.
Yes, but
He's
you
been,
haven't
he's,
gotten to the end of the
yeah.
series.
Oh, okay.
This episode does set up Jake's ongoing apprenticeship to O'Brien, which would become official in the next episode. So that's
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is a real deal. It's not, they don't just refer to it and then never talk about it again. This is going to keep on.
And again, not you guys not knowing the end of the series. Mm-hmm. I go, Sisko is pushing Jake into an area that he may or not want to go into.
Right. Okay. Right.
He wants, you know, he says in this episode, Sisko says, I want him to go into Starfleet. Mm-hmm. But have we heard from Jake about this?
No, yeah. We have not.
Now I'm curious, Armin. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that little clue. Mm-hmm. I'll be looking. I'll be tracking
You'll be looking.
That.
You'll see it soon enough. Soon enough.
Well, they do also talk about kids together, which I thought was a nice moment, about how fast their kids grow up.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen Sirach sprouting. It's not just Jake who's growing. Mm-hmm. It's Sirach who, as I said in the last blog, that is now taller than Colm is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They do find a planet. They scan it and find a planet.
You just
scan
rhymed.
It. Damn
find
it!
A planet to scan
Look at
it.
That. Another rhyme.
They find this planet and they see that there's human life signs. Humans are already there. But they try to contact them, no response. So they beam down, and I immediately said, always the first mistake in a Star Trek episode. When you beam down to a planet, you're going to get in trouble.
Well, okay, when they try to hail them and they say no response, and O'Brien says, I'm picking up some kind of low-level duonetic field. Anything that has some kind of means it's possibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it makes no sense for both of them to beam down.
You didn't need both of them,
someone,
did you?
You didn't need both of them.
No.
Just say hello, suss out what the place looks like, and get back.
Yeah.
And if they're looking for uninhabited planets, that's what they say in the log entry, then this planet is inhabited. Let's move on.
Move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's move on down the road. Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, when they made Star Trek back then. Like, we have drones now. I have a drone in my closet. Like, everybody's got a drone. But drones weren't really, like, a thing.
No. Right.
But you would think that if there's two of them together on this runabout.
They could have sent a probe or some type of drone
probe.
Type of thing. Exactly.
Yeah, a probe actually would have been. Yeah.
Send number one. That's why Frakes' character was invented.
Exactly.
Separate them from
so
the
you're
captain.
Saying send Nana? She's kind of the number one.
You know, yeah,
right?
Send, she's number one. She's number one. But yes, or, you know, send somebody, but not both of them. Why should
both of them going down? Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, we know they're going to get in trouble. So we cut to a forest, hillside of a forest down on this planet. They beam in. It's like paradise, but their tricorders don't work.
No.
Neither does the comm back to the runabout. So none of their technology works. They're stuck. Even their phasers don't work, I think Miles said.
That's right. Phaser doesn't work. Nothing
works. No tech works.
And then suddenly a man with a bow and arrow stops them. Hands up, says Vinod. Vinod? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Vinod. Don't move and then hands up.
Yeah.
And let's not forget to Steve Vinovich is standing right next to him.
Steve is right next to him.
Yeah, Joe, so Steve Vinovich is... Joe is... and you know what? Thinking about this episode, Steve is a very good choice for this character. As a metaphor, this is paradise, of course.
Yeah.
As a metaphor, he makes a very good Adam.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's learning. There's a naivete to Steve on camera that I thought worked as I began to think about it as a stand-in for biblical Adam.
Yeah. I like that.
He's a bit of an everyman too, like Colm in a way, like O'Brien. They sort of, they fit that.
No, I thought that he was his son, but that's not correct. Correct?
No.
They're not related in the script. For some reason, I thought they were related.
Well, he says, "Go tell your mother."
That's right. So it made me think that Steve was his father in a way, the way the script was written. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we come back. This is where I was like, is this on stage? Is this real? But I realized it was on stage.
Yeah.
Joseph and Vinod approach. Joseph sees that they're Starfleet. He recognizes this. And he says, turns out we are too. We were Starfleet. We were headed to Gemulon 10 years ago.
I'm not sure if he was Starfleet, though, because he just said, I forgot what they looked like. I don't think he ever said, we're Starfleet too. I don't.
You may be right. But I would agree with Robbie. I got the impression that they were Starfleet also.
Yeah, that was my impression.
Okay.
He's like, we were Yeah, we were traveling to Gemulin 10 years ago.
Right.
Gemulin 5, 10 years ago, when life support began to fail, and they landed here on this planet to try to repair their ship. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't. They're stuck here. Now it's their home. And he says that Sisko and Miles are stuck too. So I knew they should beam down.
They were traveling for a long time because the wormhole wasn't discovered when they got to the Gamma Quadrant back then. So mm-hmm. they must have been going for a long, long time.
Yeah. Okay. So he says Sisko and Miles are stuck too, and they head back to bring their guests to dinner. Go tell mom to make dinner. You know, felt like we've got company.
I'm just going to put in a quibble here. So the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
I understand that they don't want any technical stuff. That bow and arrow looked really high tech.
Like a compound bow. Yeah.
Not so much the arrow, but the bow looked very high tech.
Very shiny and polished.
Yeah. So I thought immediately, okay, so this is part of a bulkhead or something from the initial crash landing that they just, okay. You know what I'm saying? And that's why it's
they
so
bent
shiny.
It or something.
Yeah, they bent it around.
It looked very shiny.
But it looked like a compound bow that was very complex and very modern looking. But I do feel like it must have been part of some wreckage.
Part of the show.
Yeah, I'm sure the prop department went to the store to Dick's or something and said,
and they spray painted it silver, right? And they go, there it is. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Well, we go to their little colony. It's and we see in a big wide shot, beautiful wide shot, this part of this broken down ship or shuttle runabout. It wasn't a runabout, it was a ship.
Erwan class personnel transport. Is that what's
I think that's what they said. Erwan, it's the health food store.
It's a health food store.
Yeah. It's a health food
shuttle.
It's
an organic.
It's an organic shuttle transport. It's exactly. It's made of all, you know, recyclable materials. It's really good. Yeah. For the
good
environment.
For you. Mm-hmm. They're there. They see this shuttle that now they're using as a cabin for their quarters. All the villagers are gathering, and a woman named Alexis greets them. Mm-hmm. To me, she seemed to be the boss very clearly.
Yeah.
Maybe she was the captain of. This is what I thought then. I thought she seems like she might have been the captain of their ship or something.
Well, I never thought about that, but that makes perfect sense. She would have been directing them what direction they were going in.
Yeah.
You know, she would have said to the pilot, head in this direction.
Yeah.
Now, her plan.
It could have been the pilot, too. She could have killed off the captain and been the pilot. So, but somebody has to get them to this
point. Where they're at, of course.
She had to be in the position of some kind of control.
Yeah, the bartender could not have done it. Let me just say that.
That's why you're not in the episode.
That's why I'm not in the episode.
But her mistrust of technology makes me wonder, was she really the captain? So, Robbie, you might be right. Maybe she killed the captain, possibly, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, she does have technical background, as we'll find out later in the episode.
Right, that's true.
So she has capabilities that we will find out later on that she's renouncing.
I knew she was a leader from her hair, clearly, the hairstyle.
Well, Gail has an incredible authoritarian persona. Yeah, Everything she does, there's a sense of I'm in charge.
The hair was authoritarian to me.
Yes, the hair is very authoritarian.
Yeah,
it's always about the hair. Star Trek is always about the hair.
Not always.
On Voyager it was.
On Voyager it was definitely about the hair.
It was all about the hair. Oh,
well, because we had Carrie McCluggage running that network, and Carrie McCluggage was obsessed with actors' hair on all the Paramount TV shows.
Carrie McCluggage was president of Paramount Television, so wouldn't he have overseen Deep Space Nine as well then?
Yeah, he probably did.
He did.
Yeah.
He was there. How much he was there, I don't know, but he was there.
I feel like Odo's hair looks a lot like Carrie McCluggage's hair. Honestly, I think they modeled Odo's hair after Carrie McCluggage's hair.
Carrie McCluggage is actually the scientist, the Bajoran scientist that helped Odo become Odo. Good job, Carrie.
Yeah, good job, Carrie.
Anyway, we find out in this scene, Joseph was an engineer on a ship called the Santa Maria. Vinod, our bow and arrow, Michael Silver, my friend, Vinod wants the soccer news. There's a woman, Cassandra, asks about women's fashion. I laughed out loud when Miles turns. She says, what are the latest fashions? And Miles turns to Sisko. And Sisko was like, ask him. He's got a wife.
Yeah.
It was a fun, I don't know.
Again, it was a lot of good acting between those two.
Yeah. Sisko explains that they're hoping that their people will come rescue them. And Alexa says, we've made a great community here. And even if a rescue party does come, she's going to stay. She has a big speech. This is where I was feeling like she's the boss. She's definitely taking charge of this moment.
I would venture to say that not much further in the future, both Cisco and O'Brien come to the same conclusion that she is the boss. They treat her as the boss.
Yeah.
And they make accusations as though she's the boss.
Yeah.
We do see a lot of the settlers in this scene, this very beginning scene. I think they're all out there, right? Including Julia Nixon.
Exactly. And one of the things I like that Corey did, or the second AD did, there's a lot of children present in this, in the background.
Yes.
Children seem to be very important in this community. And I was taken for that. And again, without any spoilers, towards the end, children will become important in the very last shot of the scene, of the episode.
They listen to the boss, Alexis, talk about how great their community, their cult is.
Yes.
And then they go find some bunks to sleep in.
Yeah.
And there's a moment with Alexis and V-Note at the end where she says, it's going to be good to have two more strong, healthy men. It was very ominous. It was like, what do you do with strong, healthy men? It just felt creepy.
I thought maybe they were cannibals at that point. I was like, wait a minute. What does that mean? What? Yeah. Okay.
It could be cannibals. Yeah. It could be like sex slaves. I don't know.
It was a little scary.
It was a little creepy.
Agreed.
But it good at this point.
You know? Yes. Seems fine.
Yeah. Okay. So we go to ops and Kira mentions that Admiral Mitsuya is coming, wants to discuss Cardassian politics, but Dax says he really just wants to play poker with Sisko. And also she mentions that Sisko sucks at poker.
Well, he can't bluff. He cannot bluff.
Exactly.
I love that exchange because
it's great.
Poker plays such a interesting part in Next Generation where they all sit around and Picard they're playing poker. So we won't see much of poker on Deep Space.
Right. I love it.
That's funny.
And I always ask Michael Dorn, he says, well, there's no money in Starfleet. I said, what did you play poker with?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they talk about this and then Kira hails the Rio Grande, but there's no response.
Nothing.
Uh-oh.
And Kira gets very upset about that.
She's unnerved by this. This is a big deal for Kira, clearly.
Yes.
You would think she's next in command. Yeah, you know.
She's the number one. She was the one that was supposed to be lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We go back to Sisko's room where he was reading Alexis's writings. Miles enters, asks about, what are these writings you're, and they're all like in pencil or something, these journals.
These are handwritten books is what it is. And evidently she's written multiple books on all kinds of things. So
she's very 10 years. 10
very
years.
Prolific. Yeah, 10 years to write and write and
that's
write.
What cult leaders do. Well, Sisko does mention she has very strong opinions about everything.
Yeah.
That was funny. And she basically feels he realizes in these writings, she feels that technology has destroyed the true nature of human identity.
Mm-hmm. And besides the comment about the two husky men are working in the fields, this is the second. Now we're beginning to think, well, maybe this paradise has got a snake in it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to biblical references, I think Alexis is the snake in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like the metaphor.
It's also interesting in this scene when they start talking about how she believes everyone's become very lazy and very dull, and it's technology has at the time when they film this is not where it's at now, and you do see a lot of people being very lazy now. I feel with technology.
Well, if you think about how phones, just our cell phones, these smartphones, have become this epidemic of like obsession with phones. Yeah. People don't connect with each other.
They don't even look up at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're all guilty of that.
Maybe she was right.
Speak for yourself, sir.
Sorry, I am guilty of that. Not Armin.
I am too.
Because I don't have a smartphone.
Right. You don't have a. You have a regular.
I have
phone.
A flip phone.
Yeah.
We're going off on a tangent, but I think back to when I was a kid, my father, in my eyes, had this magical ability to this sense of direction. If we were driving somewhere and my mother would pull the map out of the glove box and unfold it, and she'd be looking around, and my dad would just go, no, I know how to get there.
Wow.
I don't know if he did or not, but the sense of like he was going to find his way. And now we've got these phones where you just put in an address and it tells you. And so you don't have to be present for the journey. You don't have to pay attention.
Right.
Because the navigation is just going to tell you turn right, turn left.
Right. That's kind of cool that your dad was the human version of a navigation app. He knew it all already.
I don't know if he knew anything. He might have been getting lost all the time. But to me as a kid, I was like, how does my dad know?
It was magical.
Yes. It seemed
magical. Obviously, your mother didn't trust him because she pulled out the map.
She pulled out the map every time.
She didn't. Oh, she should have trusted. Your dad was a
Larry,
wizard.
Larry, where knew. Are you going?
Is that what you would hear?
Yes.
Where are you going? Okay. All right.
Anyway. Okay. So we go back into the compound. We see a nice shot of Joseph up on a ledge grinding a grindstone.
Yeah, that was a very nice shot. And I wondered, did Steve have to do that? Did he have to do that? And that is not the hard part, but to make sure that the sparks came out.
Yeah.
Was that added or was that something Steve had to do in the shot in order for the shot to succeed? Yeah.
Do you think he caused the sparks? Was it like an actual flintstone?
Yeah, I think it was practical.
It was a practical effect.
Whatever he was making contact with was hidden a little behind that stone. So they may have had something more modern than a literal grindstone because they may have hidden it behind that spinning stone.
Right.
But yeah,
you don't think it was his effects. It was actual practical effect.
Yeah, I think that was real.
Okay.
Great sparks coming off the sparks, the old school sparks in the foreground. Sisko and Miles taking a little walk and talk, discussing parts on the ship. But O'Brien says they've stripped this thing bare. There's nothing. Yeah.
A Ferengi junkyard, if I remember correctly.
Yes, something like that.
What?
This is bare. This is
that's
like
a
it's
line
gone
that
through
he
something
said.
Like
that's
a
right.
Ferengi junkyard.
Yeah, it looks like it's been through a Ferengi junkyard.
Again, how again, offensive.
No respect.
Again, no respect.
But I got the day off. I got the day off.
I got the day off.
Well, unlike a Ferengi junkyard, where Ferengis would take this technology and make use of it, Joseph says, we actually trashed it. We intentionally got rid of everything because Alexis believed that they have to abandon their dependence on all this technology.
Yeah. So and because of whatever the field is, it wouldn't have worked anyway.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the doors, you know, that
the automatic door. Yeah, exactly.
The doors wouldn't have worked. So you had to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, that's a little loss of privacy there, though, as we'll see later on.
You think?
Yeah.
And yet we still have children on this planet.
Yes. Yeah, they have a lot of children.
Yeah.
So doors did not deter them from doing things to have children.
Uh-huh.
But there were cornfields, so maybe, who knows?
That's the privacy. You just go into the cornfields. Yeah. There you go.
But Joseph mentions he was the last convert. So there's a little, you get a sense like, oh, this guy's going to, maybe we can get to him if we need his help because he was the last convert. So we're kind of clued in that he may be, we may be able to convert him.
Right.
But then Cassandra appears and she says, Meg's fever is getting worse. Meg, who we haven't met yet, but we jump inside and there's Meg lying on the bed. She's got a big banana leaf or something strapped around her arm. She's dying. I don't think the banana leaf. That's what it looked like to me.
It's a special banana leaf. It has herbs and stuff on there, right?
Yeah.
So some roots. Yeah. And so, basically ineffective is what's happening. Nope. Do we learn here it's a bug bite in the scene?
Yes, we learn it's a bug bite.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Bite.
Yeah.
That has already taken two of the community.
Have
already killed off two of the community.
Right. And when they said that, that's when I knew they weren't cannibals. I would go, oh, okay. They just need two more people to fill in for the two that died from bug bites.
Oh, yeah. True. They got to replenish. Those kids are going to take a while to grow up and put them to work. So,
exactly.
But O'Brien thinks maybe they can tap into this duonetic field, power some communications, beam up, and get a medical kit off of their ship.
Right.
So they really want to help.
Yes.
And get this medical kit. But Alexis says, no, it's a waste of time. She's getting frustrated, cuts Sisko off, and asks to speak to him privately.
Yeah.
And that's when I first began to think, okay, Alexis is the snake in the grass. The other things were, I thought, well, maybe these are MacGuffins, but that really, when she said, no, we're not going to do anything to try and save this girl's life, that could be just within, beaming distance. I thought, this lady is not to be trusted.
Right. Agreed. Well, she talks to Cisco, says, stop giving people a false hope of a rescue. She does say that they've cured 17 illnesses with their ingenuity. So they haven't failed every sick person. They do believe they can.
Well, we haven't heard the extremity of the sickness. They could
Yeah.
have cured acne, for all I
That's
care.
which would be great.
That's
We would love that here. There's a lot of people that would love that.
these youngins, we've cleared
Whatever.
up their sickness, aka acne,
That's
with
right.
yes, a couple of herbs.
Yeah, it's comical about the curing of the diseases, and this is what we were citing Ira Bear for earlier about good and bad. That they did find cures for it. That that ingenuity did find a way to get around 17 problems. And that's the good side of this community, that they are being forced to make wondrous discoveries. And for that, we can sort of see it as an Edenic sort of place, a paradise where the best of us comes forth and we're forced to make really important ingenious decisions. I like the fact that they solved the illnesses, even though it may only be acne.
Your perspective reminds me of like my father analogy of like there was something that having to go through the thinking of directions of really the thought process, the creative, that experience was very different than if we just had GPS and the car kept saying turn left, turn right. Or if you jump on your phone to find an answer for something instead of going through the process of asking someone for information
And
and
trial and error, seeing
trial
what
and
works,
error.
what doesn't work, discovering this might be
Yeah.
productive towards something. There is something really quite good about that.
Yeah. Because on in Starfleet, you've got a med kit, you just take a hypo spray and you're better. And so you haven't gone through that human experience of concern,
Discovery,
of
discovery. And is there
ingenuity.
anything better than realizing you've just found something you didn't know before? I
Yeah.
mean, for me, learning I can do something a little bit better than I thought I could, or discovering something that I didn't know before, that's one of the best moments in my life is when I have those discoveries. So,
Yeah.
God bless them for doing that. I see the validity of wanting to establish something like this here.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think of AI too, of where we're going with AI. That, even in the creative fields, like I see some of these incredible AI-generated photos or videos, things like that. And we'll lose the creative process that humans had to go through to create that. You'll just type in, create a movie about this. And yeah, it is a loss. So I agree with you, Armin. We'll be right back after this message from our sponsor.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big money at
We're in ops now,
We
and
are.
Dax and Kira are still on the case. They've got some good news. The Rio Grande has
What
been
happened to
spotted.
Ensign Handsome?
Ensign.
Yeah,
Yeah.
last week's episode.
Yo,
I mean,
where's he?
O'Brien is off the station. Where's Ensign Handsome?
Exactly. But the odd thing about the Rio Grande being spotted, the runabout, is that it is actually traveling at warp with no one in it. which now as a first time viewer of this episode, I'm thinking, what is happening here? Yeah. But sure enough, the markings are NCC-72452, which is the missing runabout. But it's been spotted by a Romulan vessel, which then made me think, okay, why would they report? The Romulans are a little bit kind of, you know, they're kind of our adversaries. Wouldn't they have just basically gone and grabbed the runabout and then reverse engineered all the tech in there just to figure out what Starfleet's up to? But they didn't do that. It was odd to me.
And talking now to the pilot, Robbie, I didn't know that you could navigate a vessel if there was nobody at the helm.
There is an autopilot function.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yes. Elon Musk developed it for Starfleet, and
Now, this is a problem for me in the episode that I want to get to a little later. Perhaps it's too early to talk about, but I'll wait for the scene where they do talk about it, so I'll hold off.
Okay.
But to get back to Garrett, to your point, it could have been a Romulan freighter. It could have been something.
Okay,
like,
okay, that makes sense. If it's not like an attack vessel or whatever. Okay, makes sense.
And they just didn't want to get involved, stay away from it, but they mentioned it or reported it.
Right. But Kira clearly is on a mission, and she's already ready to jump into another runabout to go investigate.
The last shot where they go up on the lift and it's just like beautifully framed and they just disappear below. I like that shot. It was very heroic.
Good job, Corey Allen.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that was good. We go to a field next, back to our planet. Yeah. O'Brien and Sisko are working in the fields. They're down on their knees. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, well, these are corn. It looks like corn or bamboo, maybe.
That's what I thought. Bamboo or corn.
Something like that. Yeah. But why are they down on their knees? And then I realized when they did stand up later, they were on stage. And if they had been up over these plants, you would have seen just a blue backing.
So they had to be low.
Put them down in the plants so that we don't see that blue backdrop back there. Because they're on stage. So
that's right.
But anyway, they're working on their hands and knees, and Sisko reveals his dad was a chef, which I don't think we'd heard that before.
Think we have, actually.
It's hard for me to tell because this is intrinsic to Sisko as the show goes on. So I don't know if we've already heard it or not, but you'll hear
I felt like we
this.
Have, but okay. but what we have not heard is that he and his brothers, so he has at least two, maybe more. This, so we don't know, and we've never heard about that before.
The brothers,
I missed that altogether. So when you just said that, I was taken back.
Right. Am I correct to say when he says brothers, it could be two or more brothers? Ten. So we don't know the number of brothers, but they're multiple brothers.
Well, they all had to go out to the garden to get, I guess, fresh vegetables or herbs for his father, who was the chef. So that's a lot of backstory that was new to me.
All
of it. And then we go over to O'Brien and Joseph. O'Brien says that he has a black thumb, but his wife Keiko would love it here. Talks about her love of botany and plants and things like that. And as they're talking, they look back, they hear a noise, they look back, and there's a box being opened up, and they're letting out a man who's been locked up in this tiny box. And they take him over to some shade. Alexis approaches. We learn he was being punished for stealing a candle. That's why they locked him up in a box. And Sisko is furious about this. He says, that's not punishment. That's torture.
Did anyone laugh at this point at all? I mean, the candle thing? I mean, I was like, what? Why would you?
I thought, that's excessive.
It's excessive. I don't think I laughed at it, but it's excessive. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's excessive. But I'm saying it's just comical to me that anyone would even try to steal a candle. Okay, well, I don't understand that. Like, to me, that was just odd.
What are you going to do with a candle? Why is that so valuable?
Yes. It would have been better if he stole some of her writings or something of her originally written books.
Or food or something.
Food, yes. But a candle. I don't know. It just
It seemed like a very minor, but I think that's the point. Is
that what they were trying to say? It's so minor, and yet he's had to endure this torture.
Right.
This is indicative of Alexis's sway over the community.
Cult leader. Cult leader. Cult leader alert.
Yeah.
He apologizes to her, though. He comes out of the box and apologizes. And
who does?
what's his name? Steven.
Steven does? I thought he couldn't even speak. Wasn't he?
No, he apologizes.
He says a word or two there. Okay.
No, he says more than a word. He says, I'm really sorry.
I'll never do this again. You were right.
Oh, okay. I just remember her feeding him some stuff to make his, I don't know. I thought he was eating something.
That is, I believe, maybe they do it at the same time. I don't remember. But,
yeah. Okay.
And I must say, I don't know this actor, but I thought, wow, they got the right guy for this box. I mean, he looked like he had been in there for a while.
Yeah.
I felt that he played that very well.
Yeah. I agree. Well, they leave, and Sisko now says to O'Brien, if there's any way to adapt the energy in this Duvernay field, I want you to find it. We need to get out of this place. So they're starting to see how ominous this place is, and this torture was just too much. We go inside Sisko's room, and he's washing up, very elegantly washing his arms. I thought it felt sensual to me, the wash. When I shower, I'm just like this, you know, I just this, and I felt like I was watching someone bathe in a way that was private.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sisko's washing up. Cassandra comes in. Maybe she caught a glimpse of him bathing this way, and that's why she's so turned on.
That turned her on. The minute he sensually washed his forearms, she was like, ooh, yeah.
Yeah. No doors in the room, though.
No candles either, for that matter.
There's no candles. Steven. That damn Steven took all our candles.
It is dark in that scene. There's no candles.
No, they need some candles.
You know, I don't think that Gail read the line right. It was for stealing candles, plural, not candle. And he took every darn candle in the settlement. Yeah. That's the issue. Right. Yeah. So it's just Cassandra and what? How did she say the name of that the tree?
Zupta.
Zupta. Okay. Yeah. So she's got Zupta cream that she wants to rub on him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked nice, the Zupta cream.
Sure.
It looked like Cool Whip to me. I wanted to taste it, put it on a slice of pie or something.
Okay, yeah.
But she asks if she can rub, you know, massage him with the Zupta cream. And he says no, very politely.
Yeah. Yes.
He says no. And then she comes over and tries to seduce him anyway.
Oh, she doesn't care.
And when she reaches up, he grabs her, stops her. And he immediately asks her point blank, did Alexis send you here to make love to me, to seduce me?
Yeah.
He's very direct.
He is.
I was surprised.
Now, I'm going to ask a question.
Yes.
Again, kudos to my show, to Deep Space Nine. I thought it was very sexual, that scene.
Yes.
And I don't think and you have to tell me whether or not there was something comparable to that on Voyager. I certainly never saw that on any other Star Trek show.
I think we had scenes like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I would say a number of them.
Really?
You had the scene with the girls all over your body.
But where they were using sex to manipulate one of your characters?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Now that Robbie brought that one up, yes.
Oh, there's that. There's the ex post facto where I was accused of murder, the bird lady.
Woman. Yeah, she was.
There's a lot of them. I think that happened to us a lot.
Yeah, so yeah, but one's ever come straight out and said, "Were you sent here to?" We didn't say anything like that in our show. Were you sent here to have sex with me?
He was
very direct. Nobody on Voyager ever said that. So I would say it's much more. No one's pulling punches on Deep Space Nine. They're just going to say exactly what's happening and what's in their head. Whereas we kind of would beat around the bush and we never would directly say anything like Sisko did.
Yeah, he was pretty direct.
Yes, he was.
Well, he's mad. He goes into Alexis's little bunk room.
Yeah.
He is mad, slams her book shut.
Yeah.
And she's actually impressed with that. She's like, what does she call it? A core behavior or something?
Yeah, she's trying to analyze him with her therapy ways and whatever, her self-therapy, whatever.
That's the first core behavior I've seen from you since you arrived.
It's a very cultish kind of dialogue, I feel.
Yes, it
core
exactly.
Behavior.
Sisko asks if she sent Cassandra, and she says, you know, Cassandra was worried about you, and she really likes you, sincerely.
Right.
And she said, I just suggested that you go make him feel more a part of the community.
Yeah.
He notices her books, and he says, what a coincidence that you brought all these books instead of having this on a pad.
Exactly.
To come to a place where the pad wouldn't have worked. You seems like you were prepared for this, oddly. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting little observation and connection that he made in the scene.
But from that connection, immediately you realize, my goodness, this was her grand, possibly her grand scheme all along. She faked out everybody thinking that, oh no, I'm into tech. And all of a sudden, no, she's not going to do that. Like she had this in her mind. It was already set up to go.
Yeah, it did sort of open up that possibility for sure.
Touching on my background in other topics, in Elizabethan times and prior to that, and after that, for that matter, too, it wasn't that hard to make paper.
Right.
They have plants. Yeah. So who's to say that she brought the books? That's his accusation.
Right.
Or they just simply knew how to make paper.
Correct. Well, she had her journals, which I think they made paper with. But there were other books that looked like books.
Yes,
looked like published books.
Okay.
And I think that, to me, that's what he was commenting on. He's going, wait a minute.
Okay.
You've got your journals that you made here, but you've also got those books over there.
Brought your library with you on a mission, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
They were
going to establish a new colony. So they were they were going to live.
Oh,
you know,
well then.
It wasn't that they were on a mission and they were going back to the home base.
Okay. They were
rather
looking
they were
to
going
settle.
And they were going to stay there.
Got it.
But does he also says in the scene, you never ate replicator food even before you got here. So there's some clues that suggest that she had this philosophy. Because he says in the scene, I think your whole philosophy is a sham. That you accusing her that you didn't come here and discover this idea. You had this idea. You've
already
always believed it.
From the get-go.
And, and I don't find that to be terrible. Why not follow your own ideas?
Yeah.
We will find that she's taken it too far.
Right.
Yeah. But these are her ideas. She's entitled to have her own ideas. Mm-hmm. And forcing them on other people is something else.
Yeah.
But having your own ideas and following them, why not?
Why not?
You know, there's a baseball on Cisco's desk in every scene of his office.
Right.
He loves baseball. They talk about baseball during this episode. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Well, she says she's suggesting throughout this episode, just take off your uniform.
Yes, she is doing that. She is.
Just take off your uniform and just join us. And he refuses.
Yeah.
And she says, in this scene, she goes, well, maybe some work, some hard work will help you see the light. You're going to stand watch all night.
So she punishes him. She punishes him for speaking up and saying that her way isn't the right way. And now she's giving him, he's already worked in the field the entire day. So now he's going to stay up all night and keep watch. That's a punishment.
Now, I don't understand why he accedes to that. I understand that he could be forced to accede to that.
Mm-hmm.
But she's, you know, as my young nephew once said to me, you're not the boss of me. She's not the boss of him.
I had the same feeling in this entire episode. Why are they doing what she says?
Why are they doing that? Now, I can understand helping out when I help in the field. Okay, you volunteer for that. I'm part of the community. I want food. I understand that I can't be given free food. I need to work for it. Got that. But this standing in place, being a guard, if we're going to talk about missing scenes, there should have been an argument here where you can't make me do that.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, yes, we can.
Yeah.
And
yes. Yes.
Right. There should have been. And then the other question is, what are they standing watch for? I mean, I'm sorry. There's no one else on this planet. There doesn't seem to be any wild animals of any sort anywhere.
Cassandra's going door to door with this cream. So
you need to stand watch for Cassandra and her, what is it? Hupta?
Zupta. Zupta.
Okay, the Zupta.
The other thing I comes to mind as we discuss this, the classic move of a cult or cult leader is to tire people out to where their will, their free will starts to get broken down. So when you're making people hard work, and staying up all night, sleep deprivation, that's all part of cult moves.
Yeah, you're right.
The next morning we go out to the stage set that looks like a planet.
Which I thought was outside.
Yeah, it looked great.
And speaking of which, I've watched a lot of Deep Space Nine episodes. I thought this episode in the stage, now that you've told me that, was brighter than I've remember many
than
of
you've
our
ever
episodes.
Seen it. Right?
Yeah, yes. It's like, Oh my God, they really turned the lights on.
They sure did. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember Marvin used to use the big lights, the 10Ks, the 12Ks, those big lights. And when we did episodes that were on planets, big sets like this, yeah, he'd bring in a lot of those lights. You could rent them for the episode. They'd rig them up there.
Yeah.
And it makes those lights made the stage really hot.
Oh, yeah.
When we had those outdoor scenes,
gosh,
those were old school lights that were just so hot. And now they've got these fluorescent, color corrected fluorescent. So it's much, you can do the same thing with modern lights and it doesn't give off all this heat. But back then,
it's like walking into a greenhouse. That's really how hot it is on the stage.
And I'm glad I had the week off. Good.
Yeah, you didn't have to sweat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so they're out in this compound on stage. Sisko's very tired. Mm-hmm. Sleep deprivation. He's been up all night.
Yeah.
O'Brien does mention in the scene, he thinks maybe this duonetic field is not coming from a natural source. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something, you know, created by some technology, but it's still a mystery. He doesn't know.
Right.
Alexis is up for breakfast. She asks Sisko if he's too tired to work his shift. And he says he looks exhausted to me, but he goes, no, I'm fine. I'll do it. Again, why is he deferring to to do that?
And why doesn't he take his uniform off to work in the field? I understand later on why he does it. Then it's a point of honor. Yeah. I get that, and that's important. And I suppose if he took it off working in the field, that would be undercut. But it just didn't make any sense. If it's hot, as hot as you say it is under those lights,
yes.
Then why didn't he take his? I mean, he takes his uniform to bathe his arms.
Whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
Yes.
But why doesn't he bathing. Take his uniform off to work in the fields if it is that hot?
Yeah.
Where is the commitment there? Later on, I understand, but not here.
No, it should have been off here. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, he says he's not too tired to work, even though he looks exhausted. And she again, she says, take off the uniform. He still doesn't do it. And she mentions in this scene that Meg's doing better. See, we got some herbs, a new combination of herbs. She's doing, what our philosophy is working. She's getting better.
And I'm going to stop for a second because I just had a thought that answered my own question. Uniforms represent a way of showing authority.
Yeah,
we see a uniform on a cop and we know it's a cop, and that uniform indicates authority, a military person authority. So if he keeps his uniform on, she has to see him as a conflict to her authority. That's a possibility.
I was gonna say marching band trombonist authority.
See the marching uniform? Band trumpet player authority.
exactly.
Valet for any hotel.
Valet. Authority. There's a uniform.
Bell desk guy authority. Okay.
Yes. There is. There is truth in that. There is truth in that.
I absolutely agree. Even the marching band uniform.
Yeah.
We go inside the runabout. Kira and Dax are there. They do find the Rio Grande. It's going at warp. Kira wants to beam over at warp. Dax says, no, it's too dangerous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They have a little back and forth about, she goes, I'm the science officer. It's my job.
It's about authority there too.
Yes. Yes. Dax decides she wants to use a tractor beam, lasso the Rio Grande, pull it back.
Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So
no, it doesn't.
I'm sorry.
And when they do it, it doesn't even look like a lasso.
No,
it just looks like a tractor beam.
No, yeah, it's not a tractor beam. Yeah. You know, but,
yes.
Yeah. She says it's a rope trick of some kind.
Right.
From Hopi, an American Indian tribe. And she's had several lifetimes, so she's probably come in contact with them. But I thought you were from a different planet. But okay.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Kira's very nervous, though. She says the hulls could rip apart, but she doesn't have a better idea. So they tractor the Rio Grande, pull it back to impulse. I noticed some very good shaking in this. It wasn't like whatever the combination of camera work and the actors kind of doing this. It felt like turbulence and not like it was a blast
from some phaser
cannon.
It felt like turbulence.
Yeah.
That good on everybody's part.
Yeah, good on everybody's. That's good teamwork.
They sold it for sure.
Yeah. Kira goes to transport aboard. Now they pulled it back to Impulse. I like Dax's line where she says, "Remind me to thank the assembly team." After this, the hulls didn't come apart. I just, all that little detail is fun. Back in the compound, everyone's called for an announcement. Everybody comes out.
Yeah, was it handsome young Buck that hits the bell, the dinner bell thing to call everybody? There was something that made everyone something come like that. Over.
Yeah. Handsome young Michael Silver.
Michael Silver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good director, by the way. He is a good director. Anyway, Alexis announces that Meg has died. Mm. And everybody's very sad. So maybe their philosophy doesn't work. Maybe they should have gotten the med kit.
Right.
Because someone's dead. She's mad, though, because they caught Miles O'Brien trying to use his tricorder to save her. And she says there must be a punishment.
Right.
So instead of punishing Miles, she's going to put his commanding officer, Ben Sisko, in the torture box. Yeah.
And this is now she has, Alexa has absolutely crossed the line. If he's trying to save her, no matter what you use.
Yeah.
He should be praised, not punished.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But they do have knives.
Well, you know what it was? The guy that was holding Sisko, it wasn't a knife. He was holding an arrow. The arrow.
It was an arrow.
It was an arrow with the arrow point. Yeah, he had the arrow point right next to Sisko's face is what he had. So, yeah.
Awkward. Yeah. Awkward.
It was Handsome Young Buck's arrow, remember? So Mikey Silver had arrows, so he gave one to that guy to hold Sisko in place.
Sisko gets inside the torture box, and that's how our scene ends. We go back to the runabout Rio Grande. Kira returns. She says there's no sign of weapons fire on the ship that they were on. Dax says all the logs were erased, and it seems like someone was trying to destroy the ship because she tracks the course back to a star, Aurelius Minor, and that was where it was sent, but it was kind of just barely missed. So they're
jostled. They suggest, and then they contradict it, but they suggest that somebody's been on board ahead of time.
Yeah.
And the story is really clear. Now that they don't know that the Dax and Kira don't know this, but there's no way anyone from that planet could have gotten onto there. Furthermore, there's no way that they could have used any technical devices to do what they say eventually was done.
Yeah,
right.
And I go, that's not possible. You set this world up. It doesn't make any sense that they could do this.
I think because Gail Strickland's character knows exactly where the field is, Alexis, that I think that she turned it off and they sent a remote command to the shuttle to go on a collision course with the star.
Something she's kept in her hip pocket for 10 years and has now finally decided to whip out and use. I can't.
It's contradictory.
It doesn't make sense at all. It doesn't. But how else could it have been targeted to go there? They didn't beam aboard there, or maybe they did. Did they do? Because you can do a remote beam in, right? You can actually make the runabout beam you aboard, because that's what they were trying to do to get up to get the med kit to begin with.
But then, it's contradictory to the world they created.
It is. But the only way to happen if she turned off the duonetic field, that the generator, right? And then
yes, she could have done that.
Yeah.
In which case, okay, never mind. I just made my point. My point is it just didn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense.
That's when it's confusing. Sorry. Okay. That's when my interest in this episode began to wane.
Oh, okay.
I can't believe that.
It's inconsistent. The rules are inconsistent. Well, they head back to where the ship missed the star, I guess, and they're gonna follow the warp trail, look for a warp trail. So they're going to try to see where it was sent from.
Right. One more thing about this thing, about missing the star. A star is a big thing. It has an enormous gravitational field. They would have had to miss the star by where Saturn is in our galaxy to have missed it. It isn't that they missed it by a block or two,
right?
You know, because it would have drawn it into the star. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry.
I mean, know, you could have, yeah, you could have done something where, hey, a Romulan saw this ship heading at warp toward a star, and they go there and it's destroyed. And they try to, like,
tractor it or something. I don't know.
But even, let's say it's destroyed, and they're like, oh, why, how could it be? Where did it come from? Okay, let's look for the warp trail. And they could be in this spot having not missed the star. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. This felt contradictory to the world rules that they created for the Duanetic fields or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So Miles and Sisko are upset with the way this world is being run, right? Mm-hmm. They're upset.
Yeah. Right.
Can't argue with that.
Right.
Isn't the Prime Directive say that you can't get involved in how planets are run?
No interference.
Even if it's run by humans?
Yes. Doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter. This is a world unto itself with its own government, its own group of people.
Right.
I thought the Prime Directive said, no, you can't ask them to change their ways. Although they do that on a regular basis. But but I thought that was the Prime Directive.
Yeah.
This is when I started to have problems, an avalanche of problems.
Oh gosh, my rating is going down by the second.
No, Robbie, don't do that.
No, I won't. I won't change it. But it's my rating is being validated by the second.
I mean, the main reason that the Prime Directive exists, let's face it, is in dealing with primitive societies that you don't want to show them technology which changes their course of history, right? And you could argue, well, this is a primitive society, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
But still, you're right. They shouldn't have messed with any of that stuff. It doesn't matter how they think about it. They shouldn't have done anything. Yeah. They should have just said, okay.
They shouldn't have beamed down. Like I said from the beginning.
Yes, you're right.
The trouble started when you just go beam down somewhere.
Yeah.
They stuck their nose in a beehive, which they shouldn't have done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we go back to Alexis's bunk room.
Yeah.
And a very weak and dehydrated and just exhausted Sisko is brought in. And she's very empathetic here. She says, I know this is hard. It's hard for me to watch this. It's painful.
Yeah.
But it's necessary. And she offers him water if he will finally take off that damn uniform.
Right.
And just put on their clothes. And that's how they leave it.
Right.
So there he is.
And I must give credit to Gail Strickland, who is playing basically a wicked character. One could assume that. But she does her very best to show the alternate side of that. This scene in particular. She can show that she does have a heart. She does have feelings. They are often sublimated to her philosophy, absolutely. But the actress is trying not to make it black and white, to say that there are areas of gray here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For which my compliments to Gail.
Mm-hmm. And often in a cult, there are elements of logic and truth in the philosophies of those cults. But and going back to my old question of what is the definition of a cult, I think even if there is truth and value in some of the philosophy, the way that it's executed, the way that philosophy gets, you know, put onto the community is what defines a cult. It's her, you know, withholding sleep from people, putting them in boxes, lying, the cult of personality, the control, the mind control, that's the cult part of it all.
And the opposite is the visible empathy that she has for her community. So that plays one against the other. And that's, I think, the
gray area.
The gray area and the power to true successful cult leaders is that they can be enormously empathetic and still lead you down the garden path to hell.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So he's left with the choice of take off the uniform, you can have the water. We cut outside. He comes out. He's still in his uniform. Everybody stares at him. He starts walking toward the box. He falls down for a second, gets back up, and then goes inside and locks himself back in the box, chooses to go back in the torture box.
The weight of that scene, it was so, it's very moving. It was very heavy to watch that, you know, for him to fall down and get back up and put himself back into the torture box, heat box. Mm-hmm. It was so difficult to watch and very emotional for me too.
It's a lovely, lovely, lovely performance by Avery Brooks.
For sure. It's not easy to play like, you know, dehydrated, you know what I'm saying? And be, and out of it like he did. And he did a good job. He really did.
Well, yeah, the depth of the suffering that he was able to play. Oof. And the depth of the dignity and the height of the dignity. Those two things are hard to put into the same performance. Yeah. And he did it beautifully.
I guarantee you there are people who are watching this episode and this scene that are coming, that they are crying. They're going to be brought to tears. Guarantee you. I guarantee you that.
Well, the next scene is in, it looks like Joseph's workshop or something. O'Brien's in there banging some rocks together.
Okay, so sparks. Earlier when we talked about the sparks, was that there were sparks twice then? Or is this, do we confuse sparks here with earlier by chance?
I think there were sparks twice.
In the beginning and in this scene too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So but this time O'Brien's doing it.
Right. So Vinovich made sparks and now O'Brien made sparks. So we did not confuse that at all then. Okay.
Nope.
Got it.
Nope. More primitive tool using with Miles O'Brien banging some rocks.
Yeah.
Joseph comes in, asks what he's doing. And Miles says, the source of the Dunetic field is not the astatine deposits, but he thinks he knows a way to find out what it is. And he wants Joseph to cover for him. And he realizes in this moment when he says, I need your help, he realizes Joseph's going to be put in the box if he helps. So he says he can knock him out without any pain. And Joseph agrees and kind of kneels down. And Miles says, I owe you one.
Yeah.
And bam, hits him with a ninja move from the back or something.
Right, well, which we'll never see again.
Again.
This is one of the things I'm going, he doesn't do that. It's not a superpower in his quiver. I went, no. I could almost have believed if he'd given him a Vulcan, whatever that is called.
The neck pinch.
Neck pinch. But this, like, he goes, like that. And then
it
Steve is out for the
wrist. Not... So. Yeah, not a skill that he would have as a character.
Well, okay, I can be the dissenting opinion? I'm going to say that his experience in the front line fighting the Cardassians, he does know where someone's certain pressure point is, or I feel like that's how
for Cardassians.
Yeah,
it just seemed more a high level. I literally put in my notes, it's a ninja move. That's a very high level of training and skill.
Okay.
As a civilian, I wouldn't know where to hit somebody and,
But he has been in battle, though. He has been in, has experienced battles, is what I'm saying.
And now the tables are turned. The opposite is true. He's been in battle with technical phasers, with 22nd century weapons. Yeah. So all of a sudden, he knows how to do something that early cavemen would have known about. Maybe. Who knows? Mm. I'm going, that just doesn't play. I'm sorry.
You're right.
It bummed me, too. But I could justify it, but it bumped me.
Okay.
It was like, whoa.
Right.
Never
that
seen that.
That is a skill that we expect Bashir, who does everything, to do, basically.
Yes.
And
yes,
being a doctor,
yes,
knowing where pressure points are. Yes.
Yes. I have to keep bite my tongue. Yes, yes, yes. Because I can't tell you about future episodes.
I know. It's so funny because we can sense you want to tell us stuff, but it's going to spoil
us.
Don't say.
We go to the forest next and we see Miles O'Brien walking through the woods with a half open gourd and some water and something spinning around in it. I don't know what it was, but it's genius, whatever it was.
It's a compass, basically. MacGyver. He did a MacGyvered compass, what it was. Yes.
Yes.
Which emulates that speech at the very beginning of the episode that says he didn't know how to do these things, but in less than 10 minutes or 10 or whatever, that he figured out a way to do this. And that sets us up to believe that he can do this.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, absolutely it does. Even if you don't make the connection consciously, it's been embedded in there as you watch the episode, for sure. He does find a console, digs through some dirt, finds this beeping thing under the dirt, when suddenly an arrow nearly hits him. Mm. I made a note. I feel like, and we see it's Vinod. V-Node. We see it's V-Node, and I made a note that if he's been doing this for 10 years, he should be a better shot after 10 years.
So he's probably the one that set this, the Rio Grande on its course to the star.
He can't aim.
He's lovely with a bow and arrow, but he has really poor eyesight.
He needs bifocals.
He looked good, though. He had, biceps.
Oh, he had everything going on.
Yeah. The arms and So they have a little chase scene with the bow and arrow. When we see in the foreground of a shot, V-Node pops in and we see a little of the gold uniform in the foreground. So we think Miles is hiding behind a tree, but V-Node sees it and shoots an arrow, and it turns out it's just the uniform.
See, he's a really good shot when only the uniform is involved. Yes. If there's a human being in the uniform, no way, he can't hit it.
Well, he hits the uniform. He goes over, realizes the uniform. Where's Miles O'Brien? He's in the tree, of course.
He's in a tree.
Drops down in his boxers. I love the boxer look. The gray t-shirt and the shorty short, the boxers.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He knocks him out. He knocks V-Node out. Good old young buck.
And
Michael
somebody
Silver
had the smart idea for him to say, you know, you finally got me out of my uniform.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I love it.
But then we saw him shirtless in the last episode. So it's okay.
Oh, that's true. Right. The racquetball and stuff. That's true. Well, we go back to the compound. O'Brien storms in. He's got boss energy now. He takes charge. Shoots. His phaser is now working. So he opens the box with a phaser shot to free Sisko.
Yeah.
And he tells the entire village the truth.
Right.
And Alexis finally admits the real story here, that she made this technology. It was always part of her plan. All of it was part of her plan to get to this place.
Yeah.
But she's got this big speech. She passionately believes in this philosophy. And I love the score under as she's giving this. It was almost like church violins or something. I don't know if you noticed the score, but it just sounded like church to me. It was more romantic score, or it just felt different than our normal Star Trek score.
Dennis McCarthy composed the music for the episode. McCarthy commented, "There's an 8-minute sequence at the end where Alexis is trying to get everyone to stay. And as I watched it, I thought, what would Martin Luther have put in here? So I played it from a very Protestant viewpoint, using all the old church harmonies. It's subtle, but if I shortened the music and made it slightly more melodic, it could be used as a hymnal." So there you go.
That's what it sounded like.
You called it. Good catch. Good catch.
Yeah. I didn't hear that, Robbie, but
didn't hear it either.
No, it felt very Protestant, like old-timey, you know. Quaker music or something. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny that he said that.
Yeah. But it works, though, I think.
It works. But she gives this big speech with the Quaker violins underneath. Yes. And then Sisko, he's not swayed by this. He's like, what about the dead? What about the people who've died? Yeah. Is it worth that?
Right.
And she says she suffered every time one of them died.
Mm-hmm.
He even says, what if it was your son? What if your son was the one that was dying? She puts a hand on Michael Silver's shoulder and she says, yes, for the community.
I would have let him die. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Sisko says, well, you're going to have to answer for your crimes. And she agrees to go with him.
If she was, and I assume that she was, but if she was Starfleet, then perhaps she has to answer to Starfleet for her crimes.
Right.
But again, she is the leader of that planet. Where do they get off having the authority to drag her off? Shouldn't they, again, a missing scene, shouldn't there have been some consultation with an admiral or somebody back at the headquarters to say, do we bring her back, or does this fall under prime directive?
It's another prime directive thing issue. Yeah, in a way.
The biggest problem I had in this scene, She does agree to go back. She says she agrees to answer for a crime. She'll go back with him. But no one else speaks. No one. There's no vote. Joseph doesn't say, hey, everybody, raise of hands of who wants to stay.
Yeah.
No one seemed to express their opinion. Joseph seemed to just assume and speak for all of them, that because he literally says, we all want to stay.
Right.
And I thought, have you asked all the we? I don't know that everyone's right. had a chance to,
yeah,
to
vote it's wrong. Here. It's wrong. It's yeah. it's wrong. It's stupid. It boggles the imagination.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
And wouldn't Alexis be the only one beaming up with them? Why is V-Node going? I think
because he's her son. I had a problem with that too. And I finally went, well, he's her son. He's going to want to go with his mother
to support her in whatever decision is happening.
I don't think he's going to be put on trial or reprimanded for his actions.
Right.
But he's going as a family member.
Got it.
I thought he was going to be arrested because it seemed like he was at the technology shooting the bow and arrow trying to. So he was aware.
Yes, but he didn't strand the people on the planet, yeah, as far as I know. He could have. You're right. He could have. Although he would have been what age if that was 10 years before what he is in
he was a 10-year-old.
Yeah, or he was a 12, 13, teenager, whatever. Yeah.
So maybe. I don't think you could find him responsible.
No.
But so I had a problem with that, and I thought that through, and I thought that through, and I thought,
that makes
he's going
sense.
As a family member.
Okay.
But what is it that she says? And I didn't quite catch it. It's time for those of us who don't belong here to go. Something like that. She says that to Sisko.
Yeah, it's time for those of us who don't belong here to leave, Ben. Yeah, so he says four to beam up, Major.
So that I didn't understand that line at all. I understand why he has to, Sisko has to leave, and Miles, because they don't belong there.
Right.
But she certainly can't think of herself as someone who doesn't belong here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just, that line went, what does that mean?
Yeah. Well, even more perplexing, I wasn't sure what was going on because after they beam up, those two villager kids, they walk right into the center of the frame, standing there as if it was Jack Nicholson's The Shining when he sees the twins. And it's like, what? So I wasn't sure what the message was there. So I don't know how you guys interpreted that, seeing that scene.
I hoped what it meant, and I have no idea what it meant, but I hope what it meant was the slavery that she had kept everybody in. Mm-hmm. Would hopefully now be over. That box was now going to become a relic and not to be used again.
Oh,
I hope that's what that meant. But that's
having
me.
The kids come into
like a new beginning.
But they're looking at the box. They're looking at the sun box.
Oh, I thought they were looking at the beam out area where they had just left.
No,
but
I thought they were looking at at the box. And I'm thinking the next generation is not going to allow this to happen.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Do you concur, Robbie?
Yeah,
on that
that's kind of what opinion? I got. Is this like a fresh start? You know, we're gonna keep some of this philosophy, but we've got a fresh start. We can do things differently.
Yeah, right. I guess the way it blocked it just seemed very different from what we've ever seen.
And Joseph makes the comment: "We'll either turn it on or we keep it off. One or the other. We don't know yet.
We don't know.
Right.
So okay, that makes sense. I mean, the original purpose was to find a colony, to establish a colony on a planet. That is what they were hoping to do. Yeah. They all had agreed to that. They just had not agreed to give up technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to get in a box.
Yeah, or to get in a box. I agree with you. Everyone should have been asked. Another missing scene. Everyone should have been asked, you know.
Yeah.
And there had to be some people who lost family by being stranded there.
Yeah.
But didn't it also seem that Cassandra wanted to go? Because she asks very early in the episode. She says, when they come to rescue us, do we all get to go with them? Like, it seemed like she wanted to go and leave this place, right?
It doesn't make sense.
No.
It doesn't make sense. And they said they destroyed all the technology, right? I mean, everything was junk to them, they say. And so they've gotten rid of it. So they have, I would imagine, very little communication equipment left.
Right.
So even if they turn the machine on, they won't be able to communicate with anybody else.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what some of them want. That's what Alexis wanted. But do all of them want that? It's a very unsatisfactory ending.
I agree. Okay. Stick around. There's lots more after this message from our sponsor.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Well, let's talk about our theme or lesson or moral of this episode, starting with Robbie. What is your assertion?
I have two thoughts. My first thought was cult leaders will lie and let people suffer to achieve their selfish goals. Mm. And the other idea I had was extremist ideas can be very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Armin, do you have a...
Well, I was so pleased with myself in the last episode that I went hunting for ideas that much smarter people than I had come up with about these themes. I did it again. And so I found Ben Franklin.
Uh-huh. Okay. Please.
Ben Franklin said, "They that give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety."
Oh, I love Ben Franklin. He was a smart dude.
Yeah.
Garrett, what is your theme moral lesson?
It is all of our duties to remind ourselves to be free thinkers.
Yeah.
Independent thought.
Yeah.
Who knew? Right. Yeah, that's all. Just everyone needs to try to strive to be a free thinker, I feel.
And stay out of a box.
And stay out of a hot box. Exactly.
Yes. Absolutely.
And if you're working in the field, take off your wool Starfleet uniform. Yeah. And the Patreon poll for the theme slash lesson slash moral of this episode, as submitted by Danielle Kaminsky, is: a person with a God complex serves no one but themselves.
Hmm. Good. Good.
Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our review recap of the Deep Space Nine episode Paradise. Please join us on the next episode of the Delta Flyers as we journey through the wormhole, as we review, recap, and discuss the episode Shadow Play with Terry.
And I'm in that one.
Thank God. Thank goodness. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. And for everyone else, see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.